Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
Chicago's school board is moving to de-emphasize selective enrollment in favor of supporting neighborhood schools. But do you know the history behind those selective schools? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Many Chicago public school students and parents recently opened up selective enrollment school offers. For some, this is the end to a highly stressful period of testing, applying, and ultimately finding out whether you or your child got a spot in a school. Others are still on wait lists or biting their nails for a decision. Critics compare this process to the Hunger Games, but supporters say that selective schools are an important component of CPS. Now, for a recent Curious City episode, WBEZ education reporter Sarah Karp looked into the origins of selective enrollment, so I sat down with her to hear about what she found. Here's Sarah.
Chicago Public Schools has a system that you can bypass your neighborhood schools and apply to a host of schools. And one type of school are selective enrollment. And these are schools where the curriculum is accelerated and where they have, you know, sort of more college bound options, you know, a lot of AP classes, a lot of double honors, things like that. To get into those schools, they look at both grades and your score on a test, a selective enrollment test. Now, there used to be other criteria, but right now that's the current criteria. Mm-hmm.
So you did this deep dive on the history of this and just how we got here. So I want you to bring us back to the very first selective enrollment school. What was its purpose?
So here's the thing. I knew that Lane High School used to have a different origin, because right on the front of Lane High School, which is, you know, this big, huge, gigantic building on Addison and Western on the north side, mm-hmm. and it etched into it, it says, you know, Lane Tech High School. So you're like, this was not always a selective enrollment high school. So what happened? And as it turns out, in 1958, a long time ago,
yeah.
the school district wanted to be helpful to the space race. And that was, you know, when the U.S. was competing with the Soviet Union for space exploration. And there was all this concern about, are we going to have enough scientists? Are we going to have enough smart kids? And so what they did is they took this huge technical all-boys high school.
Yeah.
And they switched it to making it so that there was selective criteria to get in. And so, like, technically, that was our first selective enrollment high school. But at the time, you know, it was mostly... Well, it was all boys.
At some point, they went co-ed. When was that?
That was in 1971. And that's actually kind of an interesting story, because I talked to the president of the Alumni Association, who was one of the first women to actually attend Lane High School. And she said, you know, all along, because it was 1971, we thought that this had something to do with the women's movement, right? We thought that we were being, you know, feminists and getting in there. But as it turns out, and as is the case and often when you look closely at Chicago history, is much more layered. Essentially, some parents wanted the option of sending their child to Lane because their neighborhoods, especially on the west side, were transitioning from being mostly white to being mostly black. This was, you know, during white flight when, you know, white people were abandoning neighborhoods and, you know, because they didn't want to be in integrated neighborhoods. And so the parents of the white girls were like, we need somewhere else to send our kids because we don't want our kids going to majority black schools.
Right.
So they were pressuring the school district to let their daughters in. And they did let the daughters in. But, you know, the other thing that's sort of interesting is there's so much backlash. Like, she showed me letters to the editor that basically said, like, you know, don't let these girls in. And, you know, it was really a contentious decision.
Wow. So, and so in the 60s, you know, there were integration efforts in Chicago.
Yes, that is true.
Wow. Where were black students being taught before?
The idea was, well, first of all, in segregated schools, essentially, you know, schools near their house, you know, there are very few options if you didn't want to go to your neighborhood school. There was, Lindblom was on the south side, which was also a technical high school. There are a few other sort of technical schools that you could get into, but primarily you were going to your neighborhood school. It was highly segregated. And, you know, one thing that Chicago was sort of famous for is there were under-enrolled majority white schools that black students weren't allowed to go to. Mm-hmm. But yet the superintendent at the time, whose name was Willis, put these mobile units next to black schools so that they wouldn't have to integrate the predominantly white schools. That was, you know, very controversial. It's like, instead of sending somebody to a brick and mortar school in order to
keep... They were in these portables in the in the lot, basically.
Right, to keep kids segregated.
About a decade after Lane Tech turned to selective enrollment, we get the first magnet school in 1968.
Right. So what happens is that amid all of this, there's this huge protest that's led by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., where, you know, a lot of people are saying that maybe there's not, this is the North, maybe there's no rules, maybe there's no laws that are keeping schools segregated, but they are segregated. And on top of that, the black students in Chicago public schools were not receiving an equal education in these segregated schools. And so there's a big protest against that. And there was a lot of pressure on the superintendent to do something about integration. And that's where these new magnet schools were born.
Yeah. Then later in 1975 comes Whitney Young Magnet High School. There's a key difference, though, between those earlier elementary magnets and Whitney Young. What is it?
Well, the key difference is that it's a high school that draws from all over the city, and also that there was a lot of controversy around opening this as a magnet high school. There were people in the neighborhood that looked at Whitney Young, and I don't know if you've ever gone to Whitney Young, but it's on a big college campus site where there's all these buildings and it's very fancy. And so the people in the neighborhood wanted some of their kids to go to Whitney Young. So at first, Whitney Young was selective enrollment, but had a set aside for the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But that didn't last through the entire time.
Well, you talked with one of the first students at Whitney Young. I want to hear from him now. Let's play that.
Everybody was excited. It was this new concept, and it was a racially mixed school. I mean, a completely racially mixed school. But everybody who was there wanted to be there.
So at this point, there are roadblocks, though, to a more sweeping integration.
Right. Well, this is the thing. There is this idea, like, voluntary integration.
Yeah.
So basically, if there were, you know, if white people chose to send their children there, if black people chose to send their children there, but there was no forced integration. So that actually has never happened in Chicago public schools. And even today, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, efforts to integrate schools have been highly controversial, even today.
Wow. Take us to 1980, Sarah. What does the federal consent decree do?
At that moment, so you have to sort of put the context of Chicago. So we had some pressure to integrate schools. We had de facto segregation. There wasn't a rule or a law, but there was pressure from the federal government to do something about segregation. However, Chicago for, you know, decades had a mayor who was very, very powerful, Richard J. Daley.
Mm-hmm.
And he prevented there being any federal consent decree. But then after him came Jane Byrne. And Jane Byrne was the mayor that negotiated the consent decree. But it was seen as a very, very weak consent decree. So at first in 1980, it was entered into, but the details weren't clear. It took another couple years for them to hammer out the details. And even then, it was all about integration where possible, and it was all about voluntary integration. It was never any forced integration. You have to imagine, there are other places in the country where integration meant going to the suburbs and getting white kids. Because you see, one of the problems that happened in Chicago, and this is still the case, white folks left or don't send their kids to Chicago public schools. I mean, even today, we only have 10% white students in Chicago public schools. And so the result is that there's sort of a dilemma. How do you integrate schools when you don't have white kids to integrate with? You know, it's like, what are you going to spread one white kid for every school or something? I mean, you can't, there's like no good way. However, they could have done something like gone to the suburbs, which the NAACP wanted them to do, is go to some of the suburbs and bring the kids in and make it. But Chicago wasn't having that. So what wound up happening was a pretty weak consent decree.
In the mid-90s, Paul Vallis became the first CEO of CPS. How does he approach this, selective schools?
Right. So, you know, prior to that, we had a superintendent. In 1995, we get full mayoral control of, you know, the school board and the leadership position in Chicago public schools. at that time, enrollment was plummeting. There was, you know, way fewer kids every year coming into the school system. And Vallis winds up seeing selective enrollment schools and magnet schools as a way to boost enrollment, because he noticed that the relatively few selective enrollment and magnet schools in Chicago at the time, they were drawing a whole lot of applications. Mm-hmm. And that maybe if you created more opportunities to make kids feel special, to, you know, sort of guarantee that, you know, they'll be around other kids who are special, quote unquote, mm-hmm. that maybe more people would buy into the system. So he winds up opening a lot more selective enrollment, magnet schools, and the biggest growth of selective enrollment high schools comes under him in 1995 to 2001.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, when and how did the desegregation agreement from 1980 get lifted?
So that happened in 2009. I can remember the afternoon.
Yes.
But it got lifted by a federal judge. And this came after years of the school district, you know, in court trying to get it lifted.
Yeah, definitely a long time coming.
Right. So finally a judge said, okay. And basically what the school district was saying was, we've done all we can do. There is also some, you know, Supreme Court decisions that made it more difficult to use racial quotas, because for the selective enrollment schools and magnet schools, there were racial quotas at the time under the consent decree. Mm-hmm. It was like 35, 35, 35 or something of that nature. So
that was their effort to maintain diversity.
Right, right. So it was, you know, strict racial quotas that was lifted. You know, the other back reason, which people will be kind of interested in today, is that one of the reasons that I remember Arne Duncan, who had left Chicago at the time the consent decree was lifted, but, you know, he left in 2008 to go to the Obama White House.
Yes.
But he wanted the consent decree to be lifted because it did require the school district to provide busing for elementary school students to magnet and selective enrollment schools. And that was expensive. And so he didn't want that mandate. Now, busing was not lifted, but if you think about right now, Chicago Public Schools has stopped giving busing to selective enrollment and magnet schools. And if the consent decree were in place, they wouldn't have had that option. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of an interesting little note that was one thing that he didn't want the requirement.
My goodness. I mean, you fast forwarded to today, so I'd like to do the same. I mean, talk about what it looks like for families right now, because I know you also talked to a few current students about the process.
I actually went out to some schools and talked to some eighth graders the week after they got their high school enrollment decisions. And in some schools, and this is not true of every school, so we have to notice that it's not true in every elementary school. And in some elementary schools, getting into these selective enrollment schools, especially the top ones like the Lanes and the Whitney Youngs and the Payton and the Northside and the Jones, has become, you know, the end all be all. And mm-hmm. kids are very stressed out about this. And they just do not see their neighborhood school as an option. And so I went out there and I talked to some kids who were very happy and some kids who were very heartbroken.
Mm. What do you remember about your own selection day? Because you went through this.
I did.
I went through it briefly with my daughter. It didn't go anywhere, but we had just moved here. It was, you know, the top of 2021 and we had no idea what we were doing. It was just kind of this weird pressure that's the way that we should go, because she was going to start high school that fall. And it was just like, you've got to apply to these particular schools, and kind of, you know, given a list. And we were still thinking, okay, why are we doing this? What is it about these particular schools?
Right. It's so unusual, you know, in Chicago that we go through this process. I mean, so many people that I know in the suburbs are like, why are you applying for high school? Like, don't you just
like,
go?
What?
Yeah, it's
right. And coming from the DMV, it was very foreign to us.
Yeah, it's
but how'd it go for you?
Crazy. Well, you know, so I was kind of a weird bird. I remember the day we got our letters, because at the time we got physical letters and we got them through our counselor, which, so now you get them via email at 5 p.m. on a Friday. So you're not like but they literally, you went to their office and they handed you a letter.
Oh, wow.
And the interesting thing was that I got into Lane, but I did not want to go to Lane because I did not like math and science. And Lane was about math and science. However, I also got into a drama program at Lincoln Park High School. And drama sounded a whole lot more fun to me than math and science.
I agree.
And so I had to convince my parents that, you know, it was not a good idea to send me to a school where I was going to do a lot of math and science. Now, I know I would have been able to do some drama at Lane, but so I went to Lincoln Park High School, which was far, far, far from my house. I mean, it was two trains and a bus. But, you know, the thing is, at that time...
But look at you now.
Yeah, that's right.
Thriving.
And yeah, it's like... the interesting thing is that even at that time, I remember that people didn't really want to go to the neighborhood school. Like, our most local schools were Senn and Mather. And I was on the north side. And people did not want to go there. But a lot of kids did. That was an interesting thing that, you know, when I was graduating from eighth grade, I would say the vast majority of kids went to the neighborhood high school. Mm. And, you know, the few kids, like when I went to Lincoln Park, one other student went to Lincoln Park. There was probably like a handful of kids that went to Lane. A few kids went to Whitney Young. The Whitney Young was very far from our house. So, you know, a lot of parents didn't want their kids going there. So most kids did go to the neighborhood high school and they survived. And actually I can report back that they're all doing fairly well. So it didn't ruin their lives.
Well, that's perfect. We have been going down memory lane with WBEZ education reporter, Sarah Karp. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubers and edited by Meha Ahmed, and it was mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations about the interesting stories and history in Chicago, make sure to subscribe and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River. Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.